listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have another quarantined edition of Wake Up Hollywood, where we've got new formats. We're just constantly evolving, and you're seeing it in motion. Anyways, we're going to welcome writer and actress Nicole Samra. Did I say that right?
You did, yeah.
Well, let me ask you, where is Samra from?
You know, the history of my last name, it comes from my dad's side, but, you know, I heard that my great-grandfather was from India, but I'm learning that that's not necessarily true. Yeah, so I claim that it's from India because that's basically what I've been told my entire life, so yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'm Indian, so I knew we'd get along.
There we go.
You know what your name means?
I heard it had to do like darker skinned.
No, it means victorious people.
Victorious people. I like that better.
So like Nike, you know, like Nike, the shoe means
victory. Yeah.
So that's why they have the name Nike. But the root, we have the same roots. So yeah. My name's Nikhil. Everybody calls me Nikki. Mm-hmm. Your name's Nicole. It's the same Greek root. And it means victorious people. How cool is that?
That's cool. I'll take that.
Victorious.
I'll take it.
So you started in music, and I know you grew up in Riverside. Is that right?
I did. The good old IE.
I love Riverside. I actually have played at UC Riverside many a times, and I've been all over that hood. So I love Riverside. There's some good barbecue joints out there. Some good grub out there.
Yeah, we got good food, good people. Like, it's just it's such a relaxed environment. It's just what I'm used to growing up. Oh my god!
My bulldog just storms into every interview. He always wants to know what's going on.
My goodness!
That's Otis.
Cute.
If you see that door open, that's he's coming in for a scratch and he just wants to
know. I was just looking. I'm like, who's opening the door right now? I wonder if he knows.
It's a ghost. Wouldn't that be crazy if just all of a sudden somebody just came and kidnapped me like in the middle of the interview?
What am I supposed to do? It's like, okay, now I'm on a prank show and that's what's happening.
That would be a good prank Zoom. That has to happen now. Anyway. So you grew up in Riverside.
I did.
And were you taking like theater or music classes in high school or middle school?
Yeah. Like I grew up in choir. So I started with singing. Basically when I was in kindergarten, I was like, I wanted to have the microphone. There is video footage of me out there. Like there's two other kids. I push them aside and I am just like singing. And
you're like,
exactly. And that's how I was as a kid. You know, I loved attention. So music, theater, any way that I could get on stage, like that was my jam until I got into high school. And then I was super shy.
What happened? What changed?
I have no idea. It's like all of a sudden, like my body changed and then so did my personality, where it was like,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Like I was scared.
Also, that's a really crazy time just because high school is crazy. I just remember like the littlest things mattered so much, but they don't, you know, it's weird. Yeah.
Hindsight, you look back at it and you're like, did it really matter that like I wore a certain brand of tennis shoe? Like those were the reasons why people were friends with you.
But it mattered at the time. It was like, oh my God, you know, not even that. I remember it wasn't even just like the brand of tennis shoe, it was where you got it mattered.
Yes.
You know, like it was so weird, stupid shit that I never really cared about, but always was aware of. Now I really don't care about, you know, that's just the way it is.
Now I super don't care about labels where I'm like, I want to find the discount. Like I want this top to be like $1 and it looked like $1 million, right?
Yeah, that's
like, that's the goal now.
It's so weird how times change.
Yeah. So,
what were you in choir? Were you an alto or a soprano?
I was a soprano. Wow. You know, I get out there and belt it out, but I never did solos because I wasn't confident enough in my voice to like sing by myself in front of people, but I blended well. And so that was my jam. I was like, if I can like blend in, then I'm good.
You're like, if I can hide amongst all these voices, even though I'm standing in front of all these people.
Yes. Then I was fine. I was like totally okay with it. Or if I was acting and I wasn't having to like give a presentation as myself, Like there was a big difference. I could act and be somebody else and like ham it up, but ask me to give like a speech in front of people, no way. I passed out.
You did what kind of productions in high school for theater?
You know, I was only in one show ever, and it like took a lot of convincing to get me into it, because at that point I had like passed out in front of like students giving a presentation in one of my classes. So like I was the girl who passes out. So it took a lot to get into that, but it was like, it was this show about reincarnation, and I was like a girl that died of cancer and I was being reincarnated as something else.
What a heavy show. I think I did like musicals like Bye Bye Birdie and stuff. Like you guys had like the heavy let's make theater about life that they're gonna expect. Yeah. Your theater teacher was rough, man. That's crazy.
He seemed to be a bit on the darker side, I think. So you know that appealed to him. I mean, it was a comedy. It was a funny show. But my character in particular is like, oh, this poor young girl who dies of cancer, and then she's going to be reincarnated as like a rat or something.
Like, you're perfect. You're like, yeah. Okay.
Sure. Fine. That's great.
How big was your high school, if you don't mind me asking? Just because, like, as I've traveled and gotten to know more people, a lot of people's classes were very small, but my school was very big.
I had a huge school. Let's put it in perspective. My graduating class had to graduate at Storm Stadium.
Wow.
Elsinore. That's how big our graduating class was.
So it was over 1,000 people, you think?
Oh yeah, easily.
Wow.
Graduation was so boring because there's so many names that had to be called. You're like, can we just phone this in? Like, I'm done.
So then you moved to Los Angeles. When did you move to LA?
So I didn't, I was a late bloomer. So I didn't move to LA until like 2015.
What took you so long?
Ooh, I got married. I got divorced. I got.
Oh, wow. You know, you had that small town pressure to get hit.
Yeah. You know, and like I was like religious too. So you're like, well, if I'm going to have sex with somebody, I got to get married because that's what you do. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I have this theory that like geography plays such a huge role on a person's life. Like, it takes what religion they're around or what kind of neighborhoods or people they're around or what their beliefs are. And it's like it shapes so much of the human condition of that journey. And it's so crazy. Like if you had lived in Boston, you probably wouldn't have gotten married as early. It probably would have been a different journey for you. And just the fact that you happen to be on the West Coast, in Riverside, it just happened. Like I just think that those things are weird.
It's like very family oriented, you know, like my family was very much like that, where like my mom's, one of her greatest accomplishments was having her kids, you know? So like I was eager to start that early because I'm like, yeah, my mom like was like the greatest mom and I want to be a great mom too. So like getting married and starting to have kids early, like that made sense. And then also I didn't have to like worry about what I was going to do for a career. Cause I'll just be a mom and that'll be enough, right? Now that I know myself more, it's not.
You're like, I don't know how I thought that, but
I don't know.
But you know, you just get into that world where it's like you think it's about pleasing other people around you instead of like listening to the voice within or something, you know. So what was that big like pivotal change that made you kind of like stop? I mean, obviously you got married and then divorced, but what was the moment of Zen where you were like, something needs to change. I need to do something different.
You know, it was hard because like in my marriage, like I was abused, right? So it was like, it was like 10 solid years of like being told that like I wasn't good enough. I would never, you know, I would never be a mom. I would never have a wedding. I would never have anything. Like, so it was a lot of that. So it took me probably another 4 or 5 years after getting divorced to like have the aha moment that I wanted to move to Hollywood and like give acting a real try. Cause I had to like rebuild that self-esteem again because I was at like -0 when I left my marriage. I was like, I can't do anything. Nobody's going to love me. I'm damaged goods now and I don't have any talent. I can't act. I can't sing. I can't play bass. Like, so I had to rebuild all of that and then finally move to Hollywood.
Crazy. That is
an epic journey.
And you know what the funny thing is, it's like anytime somebody projects anything like that onto somebody else. It comes from their own shortcomings. So it's like,
yeah.
You know, and it's weird because, you know, the victims or the people that are, have to deal with some of that emotional abuse or whatever it is, you take it on like it's your fault and it's not. Like,
the guilt.
Yeah.
The guilt is so bad because it's like, you know, all that stuff was done to me and somehow I feel guilty.
Weird. It's weird, like, how that stuff works. And what broke the chain? Like, what was the symbol or the kind of like the moment in time where you were like, everything has to be different?
Yeah. You know, when I was in the marriage itself, like deciding to leave, that was accumulation of things where, like, I was talking to people finally, cause I didn't have any friends cause he didn't allow me to have any. And I got this job and I started talking to people and they're like, yo, Nicole, that's not how a husband is supposed to treat a wife. Your marriage is not supposed to be that hard, you know? And I started like realizing, oh, maybe something's wrong here. You know, like this isn't normal. So once that started to happen, once the idea was planted, then I was like, I got to get out of this. And I got to figure out, you know, how to start my life again, because, you know, that's what I thought I was going to do, like be married and have kids. And that was the journey. And now I'm having to pivot and do something else entirely. And I've done that like 3 different times now, you know.
That's awesome though. I mean, I kind of feel like that's always the journey. I actually have a sign in my room. It's on this side. It says, if you're on the right path, then it's always uphill. And it's like, if you're doing the things that you need to be doing for yourself, it's always about challenging yourself. So I love that you're kind of finding these like moments of Zen along the journey. And you're like, oh my God. But tell me what it was like when you first came to LA. You were like, okay, I'm in the city. What do I do now?
So coming to LA for the first time, I had never lived on my own. I had always I'd lived with a partner or lived at my parents' house. And I moved into a house of 30 people.
What?
30 people. It was like this like actors commune type of thing where they were, it was cheap rent. It was like $250 and I slept in a bunk bed in a room with like 5 other girls. We all shared one closet and like, it sounds kind of awful, but it was amazing because I was with all these creative people 24 hours a day for the first like 5 months of being in Hollywood.
Wow.
And they were like my family. It was like going from, you know, craziness and trying to figure myself out to being around these people that like, I'm like, this is my tribe. Like, this is my tribe. Like, it was crazy and I would never do it again.
Right. Like, but you needed it. No, I mean, I think that those are like, they're like chambers of creativity that you need to just kind of like absorb the energy around.
Yeah, it was like so motivating to be around people that were doing the thing, you know, like they came out to Hollywood to like go after the dream and these people were really doing it in every possible way that they could, you know, so it was inspiring to have that constant kind of like approval that, hey, look, you did it. You're surviving. You might be hungry because you're not making very much money, but like you're living off of the spirit of other people and the excitement that's around. And when somebody gets a part, like you're excited for them and you have like this kind of, it's called like compersion. I don't know if you've heard that word before, but it's like so much happiness and love for somebody else's happiness and love.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
You experience it through them. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited that like they're so excited. Now I'm so excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was like really cool to have that experience moving to Hollywood because it was scary. Like,
how did you find everybody like that?
I found the listing on Craigslist.
Wow. That could have turned into a murder mystery for sure.
Okay, but there is a murder mystery involved as well. So living in this house of 30 people, the landlord ends up making this film about how the landlord is killing tenants. And I get like people from the different houses. There was a couple of different houses. They were acting in this guy's movie. So like he was building in his own like acting base, which was cool. But then he ended up actually stabbing a tenant.
What?
Yes. he ended up stabbing a tenant and it was this whole thing. And he was like trying to evict people. It turned into this really ugly, disgusting story. That I won't share names or details of any of it, but man, what a, like, you couldn't write this stuff. Like,
it's crazy. So your dream apartment turned into a little bit of a nightmare.
It was a nightmare. Like, you know, our rooms were separated by males and females. I ended up sleeping in the men's room for a while because I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, let me just sleep in this room to make sure that, like, there's guys to protect me for right now while I prepare to move out. And then I moved out. Like, I think it was like a month or two later.
So did you kind of go to the different parts of LA and you were like, these are like different cities within this city?
It's like entirely different cultures. Like, you can be in Hollywood and then go to West Hollywood. It's totally different. Go to Silver Lake, Glendale. Like, I lived in Glendale for a while, and I loved Glendale.
Glendale's awesome. I'm actually from Arcadia, so that's okay. Like, right, yeah. In my hood. That's the San Gabriel Valley, all that.
I loved it. I loved Glendale. But yeah, everything is like so different from city to city. You have to kind of figure out which one's your vibe. You know, where do I belong? What feels good while I'm trying to like chase this dream.
So then you're acting, you're auditioning. Mm-hmm. Did you get an agent? Did you start auditioning for bigger projects? Did you start getting small bit parts? Like, what was your process for a little bit?
Yeah, it was a journey. Like, I never got an agent. I auditioned for a bunch of them. I submitted my photos, but nobody liked my look, you know? So like every door got shut in my face. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm still going to keep going because I was still getting auditions and I was still booking parts. And, one of my favorite was like, I was in a music video where I got to fake play bass guitar.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And like AOL Nation's music video. I love them. They're a great band.
Yeah. I know them.
So that was,
I saw that on your bio.
Yeah. It was so much fun. Like, stuff like that. And, I respect
the hustlers in this industry the most, because yeah. I have friends that, like, you know, sometimes they just got agents right away and then they didn't put much effort in and then like things just started happening. But it's like, that never was my journey. It's like, mm-hmm. I've always had to hustle for everything. And in some ways, when you have that hustle, you end up going farther than most people that get stuff handed to them. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I really always respect the hustlers in this game because that is what it's about, you know?
Yeah. I see it as kind of like waiting in line, right? People start ditching the line after a while and you're just going to move up. If you stay in something long enough and you stay dedicated and you just continue to go after it, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, something is bound to happen, you know?
How are you finding auditions, just online, or are you just like, you're from friends, or like, how did you kind of find opportunities?
Yeah, mostly casting websites. And then like, you know, I'd work with people and then they'd recommend me for other projects. So I've gotten a lot of work that way, like through referrals where they're like, hey, awesome. I really liked acting with her and she's professional, or, you know, great to work with. And then I've booked gigs, you know, based on stuff I've already done and projects I've already been a part of. And then sometimes I've just gotten lucky where somebody dropped out and I picked up the phone call, you know? And
that's like, crazy. You're like, I'm here, I'm ready. But that's part of the magic of this business too. It's like, being ready for the opportunity and not necessarily like waiting for it to just happen for you. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just like preparing for the opportunity you don't have until you actually get the opportunity.
Totally. And I never really discriminated like paid versus non-paid. Like, if it was something, I get to act. Like, that's what I'm here to do. And I try not to make money the thing. And so it's always just been like, okay, I like this project, so I'm going to do it. I don't really, you know, I don't get all wrapped up in the details of all of it. I just want to act. And so
is there a certain character that you are more drawn to, or you're more kind of prone to like wanting to play, maybe as an escapism or maybe as just like a parallel universe that you want to kind of live in?
Yeah. I mean, I identify with characters who struggle a lot with just what seems to be mundane things to everybody else, where it's like, well, you know, okay, you lost your job, but why is that a big deal? You know, like the backstory is always so deep, and I love to play characters that have a deep backstory where like mundane tasks such as like being in a relationship or getting a job or stuff like that is a struggle because it has been for me. So I feel like I bring a lot of experience and like feeling with those types of roles. So I try to play those as often as possible. I came out here thinking I was going to be like the girl next door cheerleader. Like if I showed you my headshot of when I came out here versus like my actual look, like I have tattoos, I have piercings and like more of an edgy kind of personality too. I was never going to get booked for those. But dang, did I try.
Well, you know what? It's also like that's part of the process is like finding the characters or the roles that like speak to you. It's
kind
of weird. It's like you think it's one way. But it's a completely different thing. And a lot of it is, it's going to like, it's what makes you different that actually, it actually first as one thing, it casts you out of the industry.
Yeah.
And then it's actually what gives you an edge and an advantage, but you have to learn to use it to your advantage. So obviously you're learning to do that. Is there a certain, like, are you like into method acting? Are you into like, Uta Hagen's respect for acting? What's your kind of your channeling ways of just getting into character?
Yeah, I don't subscribe to any sort of method really. I just try to live in that person's skin physically and verbally. Like it's one thing to just say the lines and to be present, but like I try to create even like mannerisms for a character, you know, to like differentiate them from me. And who I am and what I do and give them their own kind of personality. And really it's just a feeling. Like I have a feeling and I go with it. And the director either likes that choice that I made or they correct it. And I'm okay with that. Like I keep it fluid enough to not be like super upset if I'm like, no, this is what that character
I like that you make the choice. Like a lot of people, they just kind of, they can not make the choice and it becomes, you know, neither here nor there. Whereas if you go with the urgent choice and the most definitive choice, it's always going to be the strong, it's going to have a strong response one way or another. You know what I mean?
Even if it's wrong, like I've learned that in auditions, even if it's the wrong direction, the fact that you made the choice is the important thing. Like if you play the character flat, it's not interesting. It's not interesting to watch. It's not interesting to keep writing about. Like, we like people because of their unique little quirks and like what they do and who they are. And if you're just like phoning it in, you're not going to get very far. You got to make it interesting, even if the lines aren't interesting.
Let me ask you, what kind of films or plays or things were influencing you when you were kind of like doing auditions and like what kind of things were you like, oh my God, this is such an amazing docuseries or live action series or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, I binge all kinds of content, right? Like, I have my favorite actresses. Like, I have Marilyn Monroe tattooed on my arm. Like,
awesome.
She was so good at what she did, but also, like, such a disaster in her personal life often. And I think there's that duality in a lot of really good actors where they're, like, they're genius at their craft and then, like, their personal life falls apart. And I think we can identify with that because it's so human. So, like, hearing stories, like, about Marilyn Monroe and actors like that are what have driven me because I'm not a perfect human. My life is messy. But I can still go out there and put on a brilliant performance regardless of the mess that is my life. Right. In fact, because my mess is a life, I'm probably going to be more entertaining to watch on camera.
Well, that's like what is the beauty, I think, of art is when you you use it as an escape and you tap into the imagination to kind of like take you out of whatever you're, you know, kind of dealing with. And you know, I do that with music just because it is my pure escapism right away.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to adult in music. It's like I can just tap into being an imaginative kid, you know? So I think that the very fact that you're aware of that is half of it, you know?
Have you
been to Marilyn Monroe's grave by chance?
You know what? I thought my partner and I, we were like, we went to a cemetery in Hollywood, and we thought we were at the one that Marilyn Monroe was at. So we like, we spent some time like looking for her, but it was the wrong
I can tell you where she's actually buried in Westwood. And it's,
yeah. Yeah.
That's what small I found little a cemetery. And I actually went there, and it happened to be her birthday. So all these roses and stuff. And it was just like, oh my God, this is crazy. But that's the one thing. It's like you realize that this city is so vibrant in its legacy of who has been here. And, you know, like the very same streets you're walking, she walked, you know, like just crazy stuff. So I love that you picked such a classic actress. What about somebody current? Who do you kind of find is kind of like opening doors or kind of paving, you know, ways of inspiring you?
Yeah, I mean, I love older actors. Like, I love Meryl Streep. Like,
she's awesome.
Oh my God. Like, if I could have roles like that, but I'm not that age yet, so I have to like prepare. Like, that's where I want to go. Like, parts that she has are just incredible to me. But like, my dream role would be like Fifth Element, right? Like having that role. I have that tattooed on me.
As nice. Well. That's so crazy. That's awesome. That's so awesome.
I carry the memories, because like these are the things that got me into acting, right? Like these types of films and stuff. But there's so much out there. But my perfect role would be something like that, or like being in Star Wars. Like,
you just made my day, because I'm such a ginormous nerd for Star Wars. It's like kind of ridiculous. Like, I mean, seriously, I've got R2-D2. Wait, hold on. I got to pull them out now. See, I got R2-D2 just kicking it. Just kicking it right here, just when I need him to be here. But yeah, I'm a ginormous Star Wars nerd, so I love it.
And they're coming out with, like, we got that announcement recently, like 10 other shows. And I'm like, oh, there's a possibility. Maybe, just maybe. Like,
I mean, that's the dream, right? That is
Stormtrooper. You don't even have to use my face. Like, just to be in an episode, I don't need to say anything. I could walk through the background, and that would be like dream.
I'm right there with you. It's one of two things. It's like, it'll either take you, like, even being in it would be amazing, but it would also like burst the bubble a little bit to kind of like see it before you actually see it, you know? The other thing is, it's like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever, and I've wanted to do this since I was a very little kid. You know, it's like,
it's those surreal moments. Like when I was in the music video playing bass guitar, like as a kid, I had wanted to be a rock star. Like, I wanted to be in a music video more than anything else. So like standing there with cameras in front of you, lights on, like ready to rock, I'm like, I'm living the dream, like literal living the dream I had as a kid. And I never take that for granted. Like, to be in LA and being able to do that is such a huge honor. And I'm so lucky to be able to do that.
Isn't it a great city? It is, like, I think it's the greatest city on the planet. And it took me a long time, because I'm from here, and I used to not love it. Like, I used to be like, oh my God, it's Hollywood, it's all this fake stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it took me a long time of traveling, being on the road, and just seeing different cities and experiencing different cities to realize this city has everything. It's like, if you want great restaurants, you got it. If you want great weather, you got it. If you want great movie houses or indie movie houses or great bookstores or great music stores, I mean, it's all here.
It's all and here. Yeah.
You have all these artists just kind of like interchanging and creating little movements that are, you know, you mentioned all these little pockets of LA.
Yeah.
There are all these little movements and art movements happening in all these little pockets, and they like eventually start, you know, melting into each other. So I have so much love for this city. I love that you feel the same way, because it is a creative city, you know?
And you just think about the people that you meet, like the what mystery about the city gets like left in the dust is when people come here and they don't take the time to get to know the people. You're like, what can you do for me? What can you offer me? Give me money. Give me this. Give me that. Give me fame. But that's not what this city is about.
Right.
That is not what's at the core of this city. I have met some of the most incredible people that I will know for the rest of my life, that I will love for the rest of my life.
Right.
Because I met them out here and they're like, they're just your tribe. That's all I can say. Like getting to know the people is so much of the magic. Like the jobs and the gigs you get, like they're all great, but the people I've met in those situations are the people like that are worth living life for.
Yes. You know, like, you know, it's also like the, I know it sounds crazy, but sometimes it's the structures too. It's like, mm-hmm. it's the film studios, it's yeah. the recording studios, it's the, you know, like even the clubs, whatever it is, yeah. it's certain things about the history of the city.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have places like the Troubadour that are just like preserved, and it's
historical.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Or you have like Grauman's Chinese, where like the first Star Wars was ever premiered. You know, it's like
yeah.
all these like historical landmarks that are just mm-hmm. part of the city that outside of the tourism happen to be amazing places that are yeah. just part of the city, you know. So it's crazy.
Just like going to see the Hollywood sign. That was that day one, that's what I did. Like I dropped my bags off in my little room and I went to hike up to the Hollywood sign because I was like, this is it.
That's
like,
awesome.
I am here. The sign is here. Like, it's in front of me. I can see it. Like, I still treasure that photo, you know? And
yeah.
then I ate at the diner that's in the movie Swingers because it was down the street. Like, you yep. can do this stuff all in one day. And it's like, there's just such a big piece of history that a lot of our cities lack because our cities are young.
Do you know what the Hollywood sign used to be called?
Wasn't it Hollywood Land?
That's right. You
yeah.
passed the test. I just yeah. wanted to make sure you knew. All right. So, you know, fast forward now to you becoming mm-hmm. a writer. Tell me, like, what was the moment where you were just like, I not only want to act, I want mm-hmm. to write the word and use the power of script to either tell my story or enlighten others or enlighten myself.
Yeah. So writing, like I've always written, like my mom has journals of like, I used to write lyrics and things like that. But again, like I lost all of that when, you know, when I was being abused, like all that stuff just kind of like got pushed beneath the surface, you know? And as my way of dealing with that, I was an alcoholic for a good 4 to 5 years, like steady drinking almost every day and making bad choices and things like that. So when I finally got sober, I wrote to keep myself accountable. I started a blog. So Girl Versus World is like, basically I started it just to keep myself accountable and sober. Because I'm like, if I put it out there that I'm trying to be sober, I'm going to keep living up to it because
right.
I don't want to put a bad example out there. You know, like right. I want to be a positive influence for people. I want my story to like inspire people or help somebody. So I started with that and people were reading it. And I'm like, really? This is interesting to you to like hear the thoughts of my brain and the struggles I'm going through. And
so many people go through the same struggles. How many years have you been sober now total?
So I've been sober for 21 months.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah. So, every year I'll celebrate, being sober and alive another year, you know, so I've been writing in this blog continuously since like day one of getting sober, basically. And people started reading it and giving me feedback and I'm like, well, maybe I can write? ?
Right.
Maybe this is a thing. So I started writing and people were digesting the content and enjoying it and, you know, feeling inspired. And, you know, a lot of what is out there on the internet is like, you just feel FOMO, right? Because everybody's lives look so perfect. And then here I come in going, hey, my life's a dumpster fire. Let me tell you a story.
you know, I respect that. So I'm 19 years sober. So that's why.
That's awesome.
That's and you know awesome. What? It's seriously the best decision that I ever made.
Yeah.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello. Sorry, I don't know what happens.
It happened. Technology.
I was like, all of a sudden everything froze and then just went. I was like, what the fuck? Anyways, I'm sorry. What I was saying was, yeah, it just made me focus on the art and it just made me. Did it just go dark for you?
Just like momentarily.
So, anyways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just it clears your head and it makes you just realize that you have to put whatever you want to create at the forefront and that's it. So tell me what it did for you, like just wanting to be sober and living you like, cause that's a very vibrant and big change those first 2 years, you know?
It is. It's realizing that you have to deal with your shit, you know, like you can't just keep ignoring it because it doesn't ever go away. Doesn't matter who you're dating, what kind of job you have. Like I was following my dream and I was landing roles and I was getting stuff, you know, like the things I wanted, but I was just pushing down everything that, you know, I didn't want to deal with. And then it caught up with me, you know, and I'm lucky to be alive. Like every day I wake up now and I'm like, I get to be here and I'm grateful to be alive and I get to do my art and I get to make good choices and
waking up, a simple thing like waking up is great.
Not hungover, you know, like being able to get out of bed and like grab a cup of coffee without trying to figure out how I'm gonna make myself well, you know, like the simple things are just being like, I can just have this cup of coffee and it's fine, you know.
That's all I need. It's also just the like the dependency of needing something outside of yourself versus just living and making life the priority is real change. Not a lot of people are hip to it, but you know, I kind of see a lot more people, especially artists, becoming sober. And it's really awesome to hear that because I love knowing that, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people live with their dependencies, you know, like they continue to do their drugs and they continue to make great music or great art or whatever, you know, but their struggle is so bad. And we don't see any of that usually. Like we enjoy their art and we get to like reap the benefits of the things that they've created, but we don't see what happens when they go home. You know, like when the light isn't on them anymore, like what is their life like? My quality of life is so much greater now that I'm not constantly thinking about how I'm going to get well. Right. And then feeling bad about the things I did while I was drinking or the bad decisions or not showing up. That's the biggest thing, is like not self-sabotaging every good opportunity that I have.
Well, it's also like somebody, I think a friend's agent told her this once and I just like took it as a pearl of wisdom. And I was like, that is awesome. They were like, you know, all those people that you see partying or out at bars. Yeah. They're not working, you know, they're not working on like art or like, you know, they don't have to be on set like tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. for a shoot with Scorsese. And it's like, you know what? That is everything because, you know, the people that are working and hustling, they are kind of like prepping for that and not out partying and not able to do a lot of that. So kind of like this kind of enlightening way to look at how much of it is you enjoying yourself versus you enjoying to work at the craft, you know?
And a lot of it is just avoidance, right? You're trying to avoid feeling what you're feeling. So it's a vicious cycle that eventually catches up to you, you know, and some,
go ahead.
I mean, some of us get wise to it and we get sober and some of us lose our lives. And that's the most sad thing, you know, to watch people go out and that's it. You know, it's like, oh, I wish you would have just gotten into recovery and like seen that you didn't have to live that way.
Well, I mean, a lot of it too is, you know, it comes with the territory of some of these artists trying to perpetuate either their reputation as artists or just trying to be this creative person. I'm going through a giant Jimi Hendrix phase, like I did when I first loved music in high school. But, you know, and a lot of the things, one of the engineers I work with, he met him twice. And one time he played a gig with him and they were playing Monopoly. And then another time he said he was walking with Jimi Hendrix on Sunset Boulevard and Jimmy was telling him that he was like, yeah, you know, like I'm on a lot of drugs and I just, these are getting tired for me. And he ended up dying like 3 weeks after this encounter.
Yeah. They work until they don't work anymore.
Right.
You know, like there's a point where like even getting as high as you, as a kite, like it stops working.
Right. So let me ask you, when you're writing, what are the things that you're kind of writing about? Just like the struggle or just like how clear your head is or the benefits or like the things that you still struggle with? What are the things that are kind of like on your mind?
Yeah, I write with what I'm going through at the time. So sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes it's bringing up old trauma and things that I went through. Sometimes it's the progress I'm making in therapy. Like, oh, I found out this about myself, or like the journey of figuring out your own patterns. You know, that's a big thing that I'm learning lately is that I think I've found a new problem, but actually it's a pattern in my life, you know, where it's like,
well, you identify like, oh, wait a minute. These are triggers or these are traumas that act like this in this way.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, they happen like, I got triggered the other day from like champagne bottles popping. I could hear them.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, that's a weird trigger. Like all of a sudden I'm like upset for no good reason. And then I realize I'm like, oh, it's because I'm jealous that these people are having bottomless mimosas right now.
Well, there's moments where I always am like, you know, with a good meal, I love a little glass of wine. There's moments like, or like a good beer, you know, like there's times I have those moments, but I also love my life. So many things I'm working on or creative about or just focused and disciplined. I'm like, man, I have never been happier. And I never felt like that when I was drinking. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. It's like, you can romanticize how awesome it is to like, even the velvety taste of the wine on your tongue, like you can romanticize the crap out of it, but you know what? It doesn't amount to what you've been able to achieve being sober. Yeah. Like I'm so stubborn about ever giving up my sobriety. Like it's my little baby. Like I birthed this baby and now I'm taking care of it. And I wouldn't give it up for anything. You know, like it is the most important thing in my life is to make sure that I stay sober so that I can create. And I can be here and I can be present, you know, and that's the important thing.
That's amazing. That is, you know, not something that everybody comes to, you know.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, what was the moment that you knew this has to change?
Well, I had a particularly bad night of drinking and I woke up in my car, not sure how I got there, parked in front of my where I was staying at the time. I had a bottle on the seat next to me. Like I could have gotten arrested. I could be in jail. I could have died. I could have killed somebody, but I had no idea how I got there. but somehow I was alive and fine. My car was fine. Everything was fine. And I was like, this is some higher power stuff happening right now. And I can't keep living like this. Like, I can't keep putting myself constantly in danger and putting other people in danger because I can't control my drinking. Like, I clearly can't. I thought I could. I thought I was fine, but I wasn't. And so it took that kind of like, I'm lucky to be alive moment to go, how many more chances am I going to get at this? How many more times do I get to walk?
It's a wake up call. It's a wake up call.
Literally a wake up call. I should have been in jail. I should have been, you know, I could list a whole bunch of things that should have happened to me because of how bad the drinking problem was. But I was fortunate enough to be salvaged that night and I woke up okay. And I've been sober ever since.
That's cool. Good for you. And, you know, I saw in your bio that you're starting to think about maybe a novel, or you're thinking about some way to channel all of the experiences you've had and things you've learned into a book or a movie. What is the direction you're thinking about going in?
I mean, I think it could be easily adapted into a series. Like, I've gone through so many phases in my own life, like trying to solve my trauma through everything except what would actually work. You know, like trying everything but quitting drinking, like trying everything but getting the therapy I needed and asking for the help that I really, really needed. And that has been its own journey. And I feel like I've lived like 4 or 5 different lives, and being 34 now, I'm like, and now I'm living a new life again. And I finally feel like I'm on the right track this time. And being sober was 100% the right choice for me.
Right. Did you find like there were any parts of like maybe outdoor activities or things that took the place of drinking or gave you that same rush?
Yeah. I mean, I think that acting does it, because it's like, it's a great drug. You know, I get to escape and be somebody else and be creative. You know, playing music is one of those things too. Exercising can be that. I'm not always the greatest at it because I have to motivate myself to go do it. But, you know,
you and me both.
Yeah. Like there's so many things that you can feel good. Like, how about just waking up in the morning and not being hungover? Like, that's its own high every morning still. Yeah. Or like helping other people. That's what my blog's about. That's what this book is going to be about, because I think if I can just reach people who felt like I did at the time, and they won't feel alone.
Right.
You know, if we feel alone in our addiction, we feel so alone in a lot of things, in our traumas and everything that happens in our life. If we can just find someone who seems to understand, then we know that we can get better.
Well, and it's also the hope that somebody can lead the way. And sometimes we just want to be led. And you know, I also find that for me, it's like, I was always an adrenaline junkie. Like I bungee jumped and skydived and stuff like that. So like lately it's been bodyboarding. I love the ocean in a way like I did when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So it's just like finding these little moments of tapping into the rush that I guess maybe alcohol and other things, you know, obviously gave me the rush of, but it makes you focus on art, nature, relationships, just like the kind of tranquility of being alone and dealing with that. So like, how do you think your story may be different and or similar to what anybody else is struggling with currently?
Yeah, I think we all struggle similarly, we think, because I think social media has made that worse. Right. Where all we see is the good stuff and the positive things. So I usually try to counterbalance that with posts that are like, I feel like crap today, and here's why, you know. But I think my story has components that can be understood by a wide variety of people because of the amount of things I've been through, from moving to Hollywood, from, you know, marrying my high school sweetheart and that turning into a nightmare, to being an alcoholic, to trying to follow a dream and feeling like you're a failure, or just feeling like you're worthy of any of it, that you're worthy to walk this planet and ask for what you want. I think there's a lot of us who feel like we're just like, why are we here?
Right.
Do I have something to say?
Well, and it's you want to have a purpose, or you want to have like motivation, and
yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, when you go back home, for example, you see how much this city has helped you to grow, because like iron sharpens iron, and then you may see that people have a different like level of drive or just motivation to kind of aspire. I find that when it's like going back to my hometown, or when it's going to another city, it's just like the flow of life is a little bit different. So it's like you start to see that level of like, how big can your dreams be, or like how hard are you going to push yourself to aspire to get them, is kind of evaluated, or you evaluate it within yourself, like what that barometer is, when you see how maybe slow paced another city is, or even friends you grew up with, you know, how their motivations have changed. And there's no better or worse, but I definitely find that this city, it's like a slower New York, where it's like a more relaxed New York, where like New York is like fast paced, hustle, hustle, hustle. LA is like, take your time, but if you don't have your shit together, you're gonna be left behind. You know what I mean? So how do you find that, like, that, you know, that growth has inspired you to keep on hustling?
You know, when I came to Hollywood, they said, you gotta have a tough skin to make it here. You gotta be tough. And I didn't really understand what that meant. Like, I didn't know what being tough meant. I thought it just meant like, I could take criticism, but it's so much more than that. Like, you have to learn how to adapt. You have to learn how to take the criticism. You have to learn how to be humble. You can't come in here and have a huge ego, because it's going to get knocked right on your tush. Like, you're going to fall down, and you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to have to ask for help. That's a huge one. Nobody told me that I was going to have to ask people for help. I thought I was just going to have to figure this out on my own and like be a soldier and just get through it, you know?
Well, I mean, it's like everybody's connected in some way. Like, we all want to believe in people around us, or believe in something that, you know, pushes us all forward, you know, as a humanity or as a human race, you know? So it's the very fact that you're self-aware like that is, it's an important part of the process of just being a creative, you know, and just putting yourself out there. Do you think you would ever write like, or direct something, maybe a short or maybe a full length feature that would, you know, kind of have your story in elements throughout it?
I think so. I think, you know, I work with a production company right now. We're putting out shows for like Amazon, for example. Mm-hmm. We're working on a show called Pacific Breeze that I'm the lead in. And there's going to be opportunity for me to write something myself. And film it. Like, so again, my sobriety keeps giving me gifts, and this is one of them, where I was able to pull myself together and find this partnership with Treasured Moments Channel, and like, we're making content, and there's opportunity there for me to write, to direct, to act. Like, all of this opportunity is now at my doorstep, which wasn't here, you know, 2 years ago. So yeah, absolutely. I see writing, I see directing in my future. Hopefully more acting too, you know, there's so much on the horizon.
You have vision. That's one of the things that I think it, as an artist, you just learn that you can wear all the hats. Like when I first started playing music, I just thought I was just going to first I thought I was just going to sing. And then it was like, oh, I'm going to play guitar and sing. Oh, I'm going to write, play guitar and sing. Oh, I'm going to produce, write, play and sing. And then it's like, oh, I'm going to be my own manager, my own record company. You start wearing more and more hats, knowing that the sky's the limit, and you can just get more organized and start building in numbers to your team or your organization. So tell me like how you've infiltrated, you know, companies like Amazon, or to get content out there. What is your like best way to network to get your works or your creative endeavors out there to be marketed?
Yeah, you know, it's being human. I have honest conversations with people, not because they can give me something, but because I genuinely care.
Right.
And that has taken me to the right people, honestly. Like, the reason why I have the opportunities I have today is because I picked up the phone and talked to somebody. It's wow. that simple. Yeah. It's that simple to show your heart and wear it on your sleeve and care and help. You know, sometimes you in this city, you have to do stuff for free to prove yourself.
Right.
You have to. That's unequivocally how most people's journey has been out here, is that you have to do that. And if you're lucky enough, you'll meet people that will mentor you. And then you can learn those additional things where it's like, now I can be a writer. Now I can direct. Now I can film things, because you've created this network of people who are just like you. They want to follow their dreams. They want to make stuff. They want to work with people they know, like, and trust. And if you surround yourself with those types of people, suddenly opportunities arise. You know, they just become manifested because you've asked the universe for them, and here they are, you know, because you were genuinely a good person. And so that's what I try to do. It's just like, I don't go into any type of conversation, meeting, relationship, or even going to the coffee shop expecting anything from anybody. I just listen and talk.
I love it. And you're passionate. That's everything. I'm going to ask you one more question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
Ooh. I mean, I think 5 years, the goal is to have something, a show that I'm starring in that gets out there, you know, that gets the notoriety. That would be awesome. I think 10 years is I'm creating my own content, like full on production company. And we're just making stuff full time. You know, bringing in other creatives, giving people like I am now opportunity to actually do it.
Right.
I think that's the big thing. Like, and that's what I want to be a part of. I'm not in it for like the fame or the money necessarily, but giving people the opportunity. I want to create. I don't really like, you know, obviously I need money to survive, but I want to create.
You want to create with your friends, and that's something better than, like, I always tell people this. It's like, I have a creative team, whether it's my band or my production team, and it's like they happen to also be very good friends, and to have these highly talented people that are also really good friends, that is it. It's like that is how
life.
You build things together and get straight to the top. So it's one of those things that it's like, all right, so 10 years you're creating stuff with the people you love around you.
Yeah.
20 years,
man. Now I see myself potentially like educating people on how to do it. You know, I've done it. I've been able to successfully do it and help and mentor other people to get there for themselves. And just give back to the community that gave so much to me for 20 years, you know,
throw the elevator back down is no matter
how
hard.
I want people coming with me.
That's right. And I have one last question. What is the tattoo on your arm?
This tattoo here, I got it on my 1 year sobriety. So, if you see, there's a bottle here, and this skeleton represents my addiction, and I held on to it for so long, so long, because I just thought it kept me warm at night and that it was going to solve all my problems. But this is called the final embrace. It was the final time that I had the drink, hugged it, and said goodbye.
Wow. I love that. Gave me chills. That's great. I just kept seeing images of it, and I was like, wait, what is that? You said, get all this stuff. I'm seeing this one from the very start, so it's awesome.
Yeah.
Nicole, I wish you nothing but success. You'll have to come back and tell us about what you're doing in the next 9 months. I always love to do follow-up interviews with all my guests. So this is one thing that I never thought I'd be doing, and I love doing it because it introduces me to artists, and it has – all of our guests introduce me to other artists. And it's just one of those things where it's like, the more that we all know our tribe, the better we are together. And I love your story, and we have a lot of parallels. So let's definitely keep in touch. And I wish you nothing but the best. And we'll have you back in about 9 months, and keep on hustling.
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a pleasure. It's been great to meet you.
Likewise. Have a good night and take care of yourself. And if you ever need a friend in music, I'm here. I'll be rocking out with you. All right.
I'll be calling you up.
That's right. All right, man. You take care. Have a great night. And we'll talk soon.
All right.
Awesome.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.